Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Warning: this episode contains foul language, some disturbing animal stories, and a parasite that makes me want to die.
You are listening to Keep It Weird, the podcast for all things strange, unusual, paranormal, supernatural, creepy, sticky, gross, scary, and everything in between. Each week we get together with one of our friends and we chat about something weird. My name is Ashley, and today I'm joined once again by my beautiful pregnant co-host Lauren and the crazy, cool, and talented Madeline Wilkheim. This week is part two of our Weird Nature special, the first of many, I assume. Boy, is it crazy out there. Last week, we discussed weather and plants, and this week, we're focusing on the animal kingdom. From super scary parasites that we just do not understand, super talented birds, and unexplainable animal behaviors like frog wars. You heard me. Frog wars. We're dedicating this episode to a wonderful nonprofit in the LA area called A Purposeful Rescue that saves good pups from kill shelters, and you can hear more about that organization at the end of the episode. Madeline tells us all about them. Christmas is a tough time to ask for money, so we're going to take 50% of our Patreon earnings for the month of January, and we're donating it to A Purposeful Rescue in Los Angeles. So if you want to join our Patreon, you've been planning to join, January is a great time to do so. If not, you can also just offer a one-time donation via the Patreon website, or you can donate directly at www.apurposefulrescue.org/donate if you prefer that. Before I let you get to listening to the good stuff, we have finally booked our hotel stay for our finale. Lauren and I are going to be taking a haunted Christmas tour of Culver City. We'll be staying at and exploring the rooms and halls of the historic Culver Hotel, taking a walk through the Holy Cross Cemetery, and even taking a peek at the infamous Entity House that we talked about in our Holly Weird episodes. We'll probably be doing some Facebook, Instagram live videos on the night of December 15th if you guys want to tune in, and the full episode should come out on December 21st. But these investigation episodes take a ton of work, We have to do the investigation, and then I have to listen to about 9 hours of audio, and then we have to meet back up to discuss our findings, and then I have to edit a full episode. So if it does not get completed by December 21st, I'll be putting it out right after Christmas. It will be a nice, creepy Christmas gift for you, the loves of our lives, our listeners. Just follow us on social media, Twitter and Instagram at Keep It Weird Cast. We'll keep you posted on when our finale is going to be airing. All right, enough. Enjoy the show. Okay, so before we move on to animals, I have kind of a middle evolutionary ground from animal. I don't even know. That's not true. Plants don't evolve into parasites.
No.
But some plants are parasites, there I you assume. Go. I'm not a scientist. So, okay, fungal parasites creep me out.
As
they so,
should.
So
yeah,
so
does anyone
much.
Just enjoy them?
Someone's gotta.
Yeah, maybe.
It's not me. I'll tell you that much. I hate them. This one is the scariest one. If anything like this started happening to humans, like,
we'd be done.
Count me out. Yeah. I'm done. Just kill me. So this fungal parasite affects ants mostly and is called, I'm going to call him, Au. His full name is Ophiocordyceps unilateralis.
You're going to call him Au?
Au. Au. So he causes, okay, it causes its host to behave in very peculiar ways, including climbing as high as they can on a root, a tree, a flower, a stem, etc., and then clamping down and hanging precariously from the edges until they die. For a long time, it was thought that the fungus actually alters the brain of the bug in some way, forcing the behavior. But recent findings, like last year recent, have found that it's even crazier than that. In a new work published in the journal called Proceedings of the National Academy of Scientists, they studied the behavior of the fungal infection in the host ant's body in a more detailed way than ever before and discovered it's not actually the brain of the ant that is overwhelmed. Instead, the fungus actually takes complete control of the ant's body, spreading its cells to the insect's abdomen and legs as well as its head, but leaves the brain of the bug untouched, which means if ants have rational thought, they can't control anything their body is doing, and
they know what's happening to them.
Real quick tangent. Do you ever... I feel like I didn't have these until somebody else explained them to me, and now I'm pissed because my
sleep
friend
paralysis?
Nora...
Oh.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? Wait, where you wake up and your brain's awake, but your body's not awake. Right. You're trying to wake up your body, but you can't wake up your body, but your brain's awake.
It's the most terrifying thing that's ever happened
all the time on this podcast.
It's very awful. Scary.
Yeah. It's a recent thing for me. I never had it until someone else told me about it, and now I have it.
It's a nightmare.
There are ways that you can try and prevent it.
I would love to talk about it later after you tell me more about these ants.
But, I mean, you'd have to look it up. But okay. Yeah, it's sort of like that, where it's like your brain is fully aware of what's going on and you have no control over your body.
Mm-hmm. Poor ant.
Only this ant is literally a zombie ant and just has to go where its body leads it. And what it does, the reason that it climbs as high as possible is that eventually it's going to get the ant as high as its body will go, and it's going to clamp down. It's going to make the ant's jaws close as tight as possible. The ant's going to be rendered completely unmoving. And then this fungus is going to burst out of its head, and its spores are going to come out.
Oh,
and the reason
my.
It gets as high as possible is because the higher you get, the further your spores are going to reach.
Oh, right.
There is some really beautiful footage on planet Earth of this phenomenon that is terrifying.
With the thing coming out of the ant's head? Yeah, it's horrifying.
Of course they were able to capture it on camera because that film crew is amazing.
Captured on... Well, apparently it's very common.
Oh, so this is happening all the time.
Yeah,
right.
It's a horrible thing for ants.
Did you see the movie Annihilation?
No, I did not.
I heard it's wonderful, but I haven't.
Well, you should. I'm not going
to
tell you
why. Does it connect to this a little bit?
It kind of connects to this.
I'm even more intrigued.
There was a really cool episode of, do you know the
Do you know the show Face Off?
Yes, of course.
The makeup?
Effects? Yeah. Yes.
Hell yeah. So they had an episode in, I don't know if it was the most recent season or the one before that, because I'm always behind because I don't have cable. But they had an episode where they took the idea of this
cool
fungus, yeah. Yeah. like bursting mm-hmm. out and uh-huh. like being a zombie. But they had to create zombies with this fungus in mm-hmm. mind. But like one of them was a sea creature zombie. Mm-hmm. Oh. So the things that were bursting out were like starfish and crabs.
Okay.
And one was like a werewolf zombie mm-hmm. and it was like fur. It was really cool.
That's
it
so
was like
fun.
A really cool thing. Ooh, just this is just an ant fact. Yes. I just really like this. So army ants. Army ants are blind and will follow the smell of their neighbor in order to reach the nest. Aww. Sometimes chemical trails of large groups of army ants can get looped around into a circle, and the ants will therefore continue walking around and around until they drop dead from exhaustion.
Okay, not as cute.
Oh, thought it was going to be a cute yeah. story.
Nope. Nope. Horrifying.
Awful.
So parasites are truly amazing and complex and like maddening because I just don't understand why. They yeah. exist. But another crazy one, I'm going to call DP. Diplostomum pseudospathaceum.
Oh, my.
DP is a common parasite that lives inside fish eyeballs. And it also controls the fish's behavior, much like the parasite in the ant. And DP has a life cycle that actually takes place in three different types of animals. So the whole purpose of this parasite is to get from animal to animal to animal so that its life cycle will start again, start again, start again.
That's gross.
This is wild. First, the parasites mate in a bird's digestive tract, shedding their eggs in its poopy, in its mm-hmm. feces. The eggs hatch in the water into larvae that seek out freshwater snails to infect. They grow and multiply inside the snails before being released into the water, ready to track down their next host, which are the fish. The parasites penetrate the skin of the fish and travel into the lens of the eye to hide out and grow. And when the parasite is young and inside the eye of the fish, it actually helps its host stay safe from predators.
Oh.
But once the parasite matures, it takes over and it does everything it can to get that fish eaten by a bird so it can continue its life cycle.
I was trying to be so proud of this parasite taking care of the fish.
It will take care of the fish until it's ready to mature and start its life cycle over again. And then it will make the fish swim up to the surface and shine its scales and get caught by a bird so that the bird will eat it and it can start mating again in the tummy.
Who thought of this parasite? Like, right? I'm sorry, what I'm not God? Religious, but why? This is why there's no God. Because he wasn't just like, oh, I don't know.
I don't know. This guy's going to live all
Forget
kinds
teddy
of places.
Bears. Let's make a parasite.
Who made this horrible parasite? I hate right? it. DP, you suck.
Yeah, DP's the worst. But this actually happens a lot. There's another parasite that I like to call TG. I'm not going to try. They infect mice and make them unafraid of cats. Like, they literally make them crazy and unafraid of cats so that the cats will eat them because they have to breed inside cats.
So they just make the mice sit there like, oh, cat, like, why are you walking towards me?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So they can get
fascinating.
Eaten. I know. They're only... thing in life is survival. That's yeah. it. Mating and survival. Mating and survival. And like animals are the same. A lot of
sure.
animals are the same, yeah. especially like cold blooded
animals. Of life.
But these things are literally just like survive. Ugh. Survive. It's nuts.
I don't like them. Speaking of the circle of life, did you guys see the trailer for the new Lion
yeah,
King?
Yeah, I can't talk about it because I got real choked up.
I'm thrilled. Simba is so cute.
Simba Listen. Is so cute.
Listen, it's just the same thing in CGI.
Yeah,
it
is.
Hey, amen, but like, I can't wait to cry all the tears at that beautiful CGI film.
I'm going to go. It's like, it's happening.
I'm going to go.
But I am
no,
more excited about... Aladdin.
Oh, hell yeah. Because right? that's actually going to be live that's action. Cool. Yeah. No, to call this Lion King live action is not real. They should have just been like, we're making a CGI remake. But,
yeah,
but
I'm going to go.
Simba's
it's
cool. so cute.
Yeah. Simba is so yeah. cute.
And Beyonce. Yes.
I wonder if adult Simba is going to be as hot as he was in the cartoon.
I think
Remember
so.
Though?
I think he's going to. Okay. We all thought that lion was hot. We couldn't explain it. Matthew Broderick did a great voice.
What was that TV show? Like Animorphs or something? Was that really right up your alley?
Yes.
I loved Animorphs, and it had that really cute blonde guy. No. You both got so silent, and he turned into a cat. Everyone's evil.
Whoa.
Okay, we're done here. We're talking about Animorphs.
Anyway. We're not talking about Animorphs. We are talking about animals, though, and I want to hear about these. Go on.
So there are a couple of mysterious animal die-offs that I started looking up, and they're fascinating because some of them are unsolved. And we're going to take it way back to 1754 for the first one. This one's called the Battle of the Frogs. So legend has it that in 1754, in the hamlet of Windham in Connecticut Colony, the Battle of the Frogs commenced. It was literally a battle pitting frog against frog. At the time, a number of men in the area had departed to fight the French and the Indians. One hot night in June, the remaining men in the town heard screeching and began to fire wildly, believing they were under attack. The next morning, they discovered that the sounds had come from frogs that were either battling over the lost remnants of water in a drought-stricken pond or just ticked off at each other. They never really knew why the whole episode occurred. But hundreds, some say thousands, of frogs died.
They just in a battle of frogs?
They just decided, like, I'm not putting up with your croaking anymore, Buster. I wonder if it started between two frogs, and then all the other frogs were like, whoa, 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 whoa.
All the gangs came out, and they all banded together.
Battle of the Frogs, that's hilarious.
Gosh. I'm just imagining frogs slapping the shit out of each other, like, all night.
Also, yeah, how do frogs fight?
Yeah, what is a battle?
I've seen Planet Earth, I should know this.
Impact with each other? I don't know.
They probably do, they probably, until their brains came out.
Murder each other, go on.
All right. Bringing it more to present day. So this was, I believe, in 2011. It was definitely during right over the new year. Some residents in an Arkansas town must have felt transported to an earlier age of superstition when over the first weekend of the new year, thousands of red-wing blackbirds fell dead from the sky. We're talking about 4,000 to 5,000 birds here.
Damn.
The same phenomenon occurred 2 days later with some 500 blackbirds dropping dead in Louisiana. Scientists have puzzled over what killed them, ruling out disease or some form of poisoning. Instead, initial autopsies revealed internal trauma and hemorrhaging, possibly as a result of some violent mid-air collision among the blackbirds, who tend to fly in very tight formations. They could have also been disoriented by a passing thunderstorm and waterlogged by its rainfall. In any event, EPA officials swiftly arrived on the scene wearing...
My sneeze made a fart sound and it made me laugh. I'm 5 years old.
That was pathetic.
Oh, okay, anyway. That was the dumbest sneeze. I'm so sorry, Madeline.
No, you. Not at all.
EPA.
Yes, EPA officials swiftly arrived on the scene wearing gas masks and fully covered in hazmat gear while cleaning away the corpses.
I wonder if it has to do with magnetic fields.
So this article that I got this list from was published in 2011. So I was like, okay, it's a little dated. Maybe there's been some research done since then. Right. So I found a few other articles that kind of also talked about it. So I'm going to read you some stats from those because I was like, really? They just impacted, but like impacted with what?
Yeah,
right. What did each they other? Like what? So there was this one guy who didn't sound totally credible. I mean, I'm sure
his name was Jim Bob.
I'm sure he is. And this is from the Smithsonian.com. And I'm sure, I think his name is Gary. And we'll get to Gary. I'm sure he's lovely. The tests were conducted. So this is about the same incident, BB, Arkansas. On New Year's Eve, blunt force trauma. So the tests were conducted by the Southeastern Cooperative Wildlife Disease Study, the Arkansas Livestock and Poultry Commission, and the U.S. Geological Survey's National Wildlife Health Center in Madison, Wisconsin. So lots of credible agencies.
They took it seriously. That's good.
The report concluded that in most instances, such traumatic injuries in wild birds are due to flying into stationary objects such as trees, houses, windows, power lines, towers, etc. I don't know. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to say, what was interesting to Graves was the size of the bird's roost, which, according to the report, was estimated at 1.6 million birds. That's huge. So when you look at the number that was actually killed, that's hardly any.
That's true.
But what caused the birds to fly the coop? It appears the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission concluded that unusually loud noises reported shortly before the birds began to fall caused the birds to flush from the large roost. Additional New Year's Eve fireworks in the area may have forced the birds to fly at a lower altitude than normal. Blackbirds have poor night vision and typically do not fly at night.
So they basically
could have been crashing because they couldn't see.
They got spooked by fireworks and then flew all crooked and ran into each other.
Flew the wrong way and hit a barn or something.
Yeah, but the way that they report it makes it sound like that these guys are just coming down everywhere. So they must have been flying into each other. So my one last little bit of research is from Popular Science. And this kind of helped explain it, I guess. In March, or confuse me more. In March of last year, 75 starlings turned up dead, bashed to death, it seemed, in a tight cluster on a driveway in Coxley, England. Cause of death, miscalculation. After investigating, experts concluded the birds either took an evasive maneuver to avoid a predator and crashed into the driveway or mistook the patina of the concrete for a bed of reeds and came in too fast.
Interesting.
So, I mean, I guess that's what maybe could have happened to the blackbirds and that they're just running into each other.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I thought
maybe. That's just so many.
Yeah, that's a lot. I thought maybe it had something to do with magnetic fields because they've discovered recently, not super recently, but like fairly recently, how birds flock the way that they flock.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And, you know, how they know to migrate north or south. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with like, I mean, it has a little bit to do with like the weather changing and stuff, but it has everything to do with magnetic fields and the way animals can sense and use magnetic fields to survive.
Right.
So even like, and that's how birds flock. That's how they know like when they're turning. That's how they know where to go.
Right.
That's how bats fly long distances because they obviously, especially like echolocation works in caves. It doesn't work outside.
Yeah. What do you do when you're outside?
And then also, cows, when they are grazing, will only face north or south.
That's fun.
They do not face east or west. And they all face like the same direction while they're grazing with their, you know, group.
Well, so this got me thinking. I was like, I guess it's crazy and I guess it's understandable if you're in like a huge flock of birds and you can't really see the horizon, which you need to fly. So you're just like, oh, I follow my neighbor left or right, you know, and you're just kind of following the flow. That kind of got me thinking about lemmings. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with these lemmings off jumping off a cliff?
Yeah, I know
they're doing whatever the parable, one ahead of them
does. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Committing suicide.
Right. Yeah.
It's a lie.
What?
Okay. So Wait, because I was like, excuse me? Yeah. This is what I found from the Alaska Fish and Wildlife News. This was published on September 2003. Lemming suicide myth, Disney film faked bogus behavior.
Disney. Yeah.
Sorry, I know you love Disney in this house.
It's me. It's fine. No, it's fair. There's always controversy around Disney. I'm used to it.
Yeah, and this is the most controversial. Yeah, what? Like, this is more controversial than Walt Disney being racist. No, he wasn't racist, but he didn't help Jews.
At all.
Which there's things that are just rumors, but anyway,
continue.
We won't get into the anti-Semite stuff.
Right. Alaska had to say, this is by Riley Woodford, it's a complete urban legend. That's actually was Thomas McDonoghue that said that. I think it's blown out of proportion based on a Disney documentary in the 50s, and that brought it to the mainstream. So for anybody that doesn't know, lemmings are kind of like mice. They're kind of like wood creatures.
Aren't they?
They're a kind of short-tailed vole, a mouse-like rodent that favors tundra and open grasslands. Three kinds are found in Alaska, including the collared lemming, the only rodent that turns white in winter.
Cool.
Whoa.
It turns wild. I know. I didn't research that part, but I found that cool.
Wow.
How fun.
Okay. So in 1958, Walt Disney produced White Wilderness, part of the studio's True Life Adventure series. So if you go, you can find this clip on the internet, and I watched it, and being a filmmaker, I think you will see what they're talking about when you watch it. It's kind of like, you know, early forms of Planet Earth, where it's just like,
right.
So it's funny too, because it has like little Disney sound effects and then like the timpani roll, and it's a nature documentary. Yeah, it's a nature documentary.
It's okay. A nature documentary for children.
But according to a 1983 investigation by Canadian Broadcasting Corporation producer Brian Vallée, the lemming scenes were faked. The lemmings supposedly committing mass suicide by leaping into the ocean were actually thrown off a cliff by the Disney filmmakers.
No.
Oh,
no.
My gosh.
The epic lemming migration was staged using careful editing, tight camera angles, and a few dozen lemmings running on snow-covered Lazy Susan-style turntables.
Why would they do that?
Up.
Why would
That's
they
do so that? Mean.
This report is very harsh. It does seem
it's
like...
so mean.
Yeah. It is so mean, and I'm very surprised. Prize, but I mean, I guess, you know,
I'm sadly not surprised. As much as I love Disney, I can see them being like, we have to get the shot. Yeah, this could have been any filmmaker, really. Like, we have to get,
which makes it even more shocking.
I know, we have to get the story.
White Wilderness was filmed in Alberta, Canada, a landlocked province, and not on location in lemmings' natural habitat. There are about 20 lemming species found in the circumpolar north, but evidently not in that area of Alberta. So the Disney people bought lemmings from Inuit children a couple provinces away in Manitoba and staged the whole sequence. In the lemming segment, the little rodents assemble for a mass migration, scamper across the tundra, and ford a tiny stream, as narrator Winston Hibbler explains that a kind of compulsion seizes each tiny rodent, and carried along by an unreasoning hysteria, each falls into step for a march that will take them to a strange destiny. That destiny is to jump into the ocean as they approach the sea, quote unquote, which is actually a river because of tight cropping. Hibbler continues, they've become victims of an obsession, a one-track thought. Move on, move on. The pack of lemmings reaches the final precipice. And then he says, this is the last chance to turn back. Yet over they go, casting themselves out bodily into space. But they were really just being pushed.
They were just being thrown.
Awful.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
But why?
Yeah. It's a great question, dude. I don't know.
Like, why did that have to happen?
Why did they do that?
I don't know. I mean, was Disney confused and they were trying to reenact the mass migration? And then words got mixed about, because then it goes on that lemmings can swim and will cross bodies of water in their quest for greener pastures. Sometimes they do drown. Dispersal and accidental death is a far cry from the instinctive, deliberate mass suicide depicted in White Wilderness. But Hibbler explains that life is tough in the lemmings' weird world of frozen chaos. The voiceover implies that lemmings take the plunge every 7 to 10 years to alleviate overpopulation.
Lemmings,
yes,
are they kind of like the army ants where they do follow each other?
I don't think so. I mean,
not even.
I don't
so
know
it sounds
honestly
like that's just completely
honestly this
made up.
Was something I found out today because I was looking over all my research and I was like, but what about lemmings? And then I found this.
Like, the world knows lemmings as the things that follow each other. Like, we call other humans lemmings if we think they're a follower. Like, our whole life is wrong.
Yeah, because it's literally based off the, if your friends jump off a bridge, would you?
Exactly.
Yeah, are you a lemming?
Oh, my God. What is up and what is down?
I'm so upset. It's raining dogs and cat poles.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's maybe more to be done on our side, but Alaska Fish and Wildlife is like, it's a big crock
of
shit.
Yeah. They're
like,
hey, guess what?
Oh, my gosh.
No. Maybe mass migration, but not mass suicide.
Right. Which, is, yeah, that's huge. That is a huge discovery. Yeah.
So there's some more mass things happening with animals.
I want to know more.
So West Coast pelicans. They crashed into cars and boats, huddled in yards, and were struck by vehicles. Poor guys.
Oh,
these made
no.
me sad. Hundreds of pelicans from Oregon to Mexico were found either acting funny or dead in 2009, and no one was really sure why. Rescuers speculated that the odd behavior was possibly an illness caused by a virus or contaminants washed into the ocean after forest fires in Southern California. Another theory was that unseasonable weather patterns threw off the birds' eating habits, causing them to act disoriented. Bummer.
Yikes.
Yeah.
But do they not know for sure?
It didn't
like, did they test?
I don't. I mean, I think that's must be. It kind of seems like people don't care. I mean, like, because they're like, true, why did this happen? But then it's not like they like
went extinct. Yeah.
Well, okay. So listen to this one. Australian pilot whales. In late 2008, 60 pilot whales beached themselves along the rocky coast of the southern Australia island state of Tasmania. A Whoa. Week later, 150 long, thin pilot whales did the same. Then, in so a year later, then in early January 2009, 45 sperm whales perished when they stranded themselves on a Tasmanian sandbar. And lastly, and the most egregious in the string of incidents, 194 pilot whales and a handful of bottleneck dolphins breached themselves along the same coastline in March. By the time officials arrived at the scene, 140 were dead. Yeah. Using stretchers, small boats, and jet skis, more than 100 volunteers managed to save 54. But with four beaching incidents in as many months, scientists found themselves at a loss to explain why the majestic mammals had gone ashore.
I had heard Whoa. Of that one before. I did not know the numbers on it. Jesus.
That is so
That's
many.
A lot of animals.
Yeah.
Why?
Why did that happen? Why so
Warming
many?
Water? Yeah. I don't know.
It could be warming water. It yeah. could be that, you know, because shallow waters are colder waters. I mean, either like extremely deep, or I'm sorry, shallow waters are the warmer waters. And they get confused when like the usually very, very freezing cold waters is starting mm-hmm. to warm up. They get confused about which way is what.
It could mm-hmm. be true and they go too shallow.
Mm-hmm. They go too shallow and then they can't. They get back out.
It's so sad.
But that is a lot, and that is weird that it stopped.
It is a lot. Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. That seems like something else was at play there.
Aliens?
Of course. That's the answer. Okay.
In the first research I did about the blackbirds, who's that guy that I'm very skeptical of, seemed to think that the Arkansas incident was unrelated to the Louisiana incident, that it was just like these things happen sometimes.
Wasn't
they, like,
it just
get
a couple
startled.
Days later?
Yeah.
And it was blackbirds.
And the guy was like, "Yeah, shit happens."
Yeah, yeah.
No,
and my
that's
later,
like too coincidental.
The same phenomenon occurred 2 days later.
Yeah,
with
no,
with
shut
some
up,
500
guy.
Blackbirds dropping dead in Louisiana.
Yeah, that has to be connected.
That's what I thought too. But
who's
he was
this
like,
dummy?
Jim Bob.
Jim Bob Joe.
Okay. Two more. Chilean birds and sardines. Over the course of 2 months in 2009, millions of sardines, thousands of flamingos, hundreds of penguins, and nearly 60 pelicans died in seemingly unrelated incidents. What? First, it was the penguins. About 1,200 were found dead in late March on a remote beach in southern Chile. Next, in April, millions of sardines washed ashore nearby. Then thousands of the rare Andean flamingo abandoned their nests in the north of Chile, leaving their 2,000 chicks to die in their shells. Lastly, in late May, nearly 60 pelicans were found dead on the South American nation's central coast. What's worse, no one could say concretely why these animals had died. While some pointed to global warming, overfishing, population, or disease, most blamed Chile's especially dry and hot 2009 summer.
Wow. Penguins are my favorite real. Animal, and that makes me so sad.
Oh, I'm so imagining
you. Sardines penguins. Are your favorite animal?
Yes, the sardines are. They're so cute.
All right, we are all familiar with this one. It started in 2006. Scores of honeybees began dying for seemingly no reason, prompting scientists to come up with the term colony collapse disorder. According to the Department of Agriculture, reported bee colony death rates in the U.S. were 29% in 2009, rising to 34% in 2010. And although a handful of plausible explanations have been offered, fungal infection, as we know from Ashley, thank you. Mm-hmm. Pesticides, climate change, no one really knows why they're dying. But it's not just honeybees. A recent study by the University of Illinois suggests that the four main types of bumblebee populations have plummeted more than 90% in the past 20 years.
That 90%. Is
such a large number.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier, that new data from... I don't know where it's from. Science? I have no idea. But I was reading an article. It was in
but
New York.
We believe them is the
right?
important part.
Yes, but the
We're
New York Times
in the
article
that believes science.
About how insects just as a whole
right.
are disappearing.
Are vanishing.
They call it like the windshield factor. Like literally used to, you drive cross country, you got to scrape bugs off your windshield. Yeah. Wow. You don't have to anymore.
That's crazy.
They're like
sad.
Disappearing so quickly. And the thing is like bugs are... incalculable. We right. have no mm-hmm. idea how many there are.
They're just
but
so
they're disappearing
many.
At such a rate that we're noticing.
Yeah.
Which means they're going.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's so dangerous for humans because we rely on them for so much. I mean, especially the bees. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really scary.
The bees.
I just want to go on record and say how important it is to believe scientists, because first off, science is awesome, but there are science a lot of cool. parts of science that are very unfun. And my hat's off to all scientists out there, yeah. but like Amen. How strict they have to be with yeah. their studies mm-hmm. and like proving and disproving, like,
and how long it takes yep. lifetimes, sometimes mm-hmm. multiple lifetimes. Yeah. Like you will start a project and you won't get to see
the end of it.
You won't get to see the results,
or if it's like contaminated in some way, mm-hmm.
yeah. and you get paid to start all over. Shit,
yeah,
yeah. They should be making millions for the time that they have to spend on these things.
Scientists should be our new rock stars.
I know.
Move over, Beyonce.
They've always been right. my rock star. Well, here's Move the over, thing: bae. We don't know Beyonce.
She could be a scientist.
Yeah, she true. Might be. I wouldn't put she it past could be. Her.
She's Illuminati.
No,
she's an Illuminati
Hold
scientist.
On. Stand by. Hold the phone.
Oh, you haven't heard?
Oh, you haven't heard? Let me tell you about our Lord
She
and
lives
Savior.
In the Denver airport. She's Illuminati.
She worships something. Yep. Money? I don't know. I have to show you this bird.
Oh, yeah.
Please do.
Is part of it going to be trying to describe what it looks like to the listeners?
You know what? No, but it does.
We are going to have a slideshow on Instagram mm-hmm. for our yes. listeners showing you 100%. Everything we've discussed.
Okay, so it's called the lyrebird, and they are incredible. They live in Australia. They're beautiful birds. They're really gorgeous. Most birds are, especially the males. They have these long, pretty feathered tails that they can fan out kind of like a peacock, mm-hmm. but they're really wispy feathers. Mm-hmm. And the most interesting thing about the lyrebird is their song. They sing throughout the year, but from June to August, it's breeding season, and mm-hmm. they could sing for up to 4 hours a day. And the song is a mixture of elements of its own song mm-hmm. and any number of mimicked songs and noises. They can mimic to perfection the individual songs of other birds, the chatters of flocks of birds, koalas, dingoes. They can mimic almost any sound they have ever heard.
Wow.
They can mimic fire alarms, dogs barking, music,
oh my God.
Crying babies, chainsaws, and even human voices.
Oh, cool. No.
So I have a video of the lyrebird singing a song. Let me fast forward. We don't need to see David Attenborough.
Don't we? He clears a space in the forest to serve as his concert platform. To persuade females to come close and admire his plumes, he sings the most complex song he can manage. And he does that by
copying
the songs
like 20 birds
of all the other birds yeah. he hears around him.
He made a cereal crunching noise. Kookaburra. And now he's a dinosaur.
Oh my gosh!
It's a very convincing impersonation.
Oh.
He's a raptor.
Even the original is full.
Monkey?
He can imitate the calls of at least 20 different species.
Wow.
He is every animal.
He also, in his attempt to outsing his rivals, incorporates other sounds that he hears in the forest.
Oh!
That was a camera shutter.
That's awesome.
It was perfect.
And again. And now a camera with a motor drive.
That's awesome.
No!
Fire alarm?
And that's a car alarm.
Wow.
And now the sounds of foresters and their chainsaws working nearby.
How?
What?
Shut up. How is that coming out of a bird?
Insane?
That was a chainsaw.
Wow.
I mean, the camera shutter was my absolute favorite. That was the cutest shutter thing. And his mouth just going up and down while he's
It can mimic any sound that it hears. There's videos of people, because they come right up to you. They're not like shy animals. They'll parrots, you know what I mean? But they aren't shy. They're not going to run away from you. And there are videos of people being like, and the bird just right back at them because it can mimic like anything.
It's the cutest thing I've ever
seen.
It's
so cute.
And it's very talented. I have a nightmare animal.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not a nightmare. He's fine and he doesn't harm anyone, but it's the creepiest thing that's ever happened. So I mentioned earlier, I'm a little afraid of the sea.
A little bit.
Can't wait.
There is a mole, like a mole that digs underground called it's just a star-nosed
Oh, come on. How could you hate on
them? You think they're cute?
No, I don't. Don't look at me.
I came
from the one out. Looks like a star because it has tentacles coming out of it.
I came from the woman who loves naked mole rats.
Oh, that's true.
Which surprisingly is featured on Call Me, Beat Me, If You Want to Reach Me.
Yep.
Kim Possible, how
that's
fun.
That's right.
Yeah.
What was that naked mole rat's name?
Rufus.
Love it.
Naked mole rats are there's something that has to do with their skin that is being, unfortunately, animal testing, it's a real thing, it's horrible, but something about naked mole rat skin can potentially cure cancer.
Whoa.
Naked mole rats have
this.
0% chance of getting cancer.
What?
Yeah,
we need to be investigating those mole rats.
They think it's something about the oils on their skin, the natural oils on their skin.
Get some of that.
Right?
So your little star guy has
that?
Let
me get some of that.
He doesn't.
Okay, well.
We got tentacles.
He's
got tentacles on his face.
Like a nightmare. His face literally looks like an octopus coming at you. So he is my true nightmare.
So he can give you 10 kisses at once.
Shut your damn mouth. I want nothing. That is, when I imagine a star-nosed mole coming towards me and making smoochy sounds, everything inside
me is
cringing.
Hey, what's Bill Nye's character's name in Pirates of the Caribbean 2?
He's in
Pirates. I didn't even know he was in it.
He's the octopus man.
No, he's not.
Bill Nye?
You're saying Bill Nye the science guy.
No, not Bill Nye. Bill Nye.
Okay, you have to enunciate.
Sorry.
Madeline and I both thought, I was like, that is absolutely not him.
I didn't even think of Bill Nye.
I was like, I know nothing, but I know this.
Yeah, what is his name?
And he's on the Pirates
the
Caribbean.
He's like
ride.
The captain.
Yeah.
And
he's
has
not Barbossa.
He's
not Davy Jones.
Davy Jones.
Oh, yeah.
It is Davy Jones.
Oh.
Never mind.
No, it's not, because they're trying to find Davy Jones' locker, I thought, the whole time, and so he's not.
He is Davy Jones.
Are we sure?
Yes. Yeah. Wait. Yes. Because of the heart. And then that's why he doesn't have his heart, is because
the
sea
woman
witch
took
stole it.
You're right. So it's
Davy
probably
Jones.
Davy Jones.
And she's Davy. And he comes for dead souls or people that are about to die and makes them join.
Are we sure it's not Tentacle Face Jones? No, you're right. Okay. So. Star-nosed mole. The sole member of the genus Condylura, this half-foot-long animal, so he's a little guy, ranges in wetlands from southeastern Canada through parts of the eastern United States and as far south as Georgia. So this mole is quite common in most areas, but few people even know this guy exists or have ever spotted him because he's mostly below ground or swimming around in swamps. And it's because he likes to be in dark, crazy places because his senses are so heightened from his tentacles.
Right.
So moles in general can't really see and they have to use other senses to bump around and find things. But this guy, I'll hand it to him. He's pretty amazing. He has 22 fleshy appendages called rays that come around his snout, making him look like a horror movie. And he's armed with 100,000 nerve endings crammed into this area. 100,000 nerve endings. And this area on his nose is roughly the size of our fingertip. Like, hold up your finger. Listeners, do it. Look at that. It's little. And he has all those nerve endings on it. So his rays are unique because they give him such a sensitive touch that He is able to touch 10 or 12 spots on the ground in eight tenths of a second, I think they said. Yeah. And he can touch 10 or 12 spots. And so if you see him in action, it just looks like he's like shaking from side to side. He looks really erratic and nuts, but really he's just touching all these different spots with his tentacles, hitting 10 or 12 spots in less than a second. And he knows after that second exactly what's in his area, how he should proceed, move forward, how many bugs are in the area that he can suck up and eat. He can also breathe underwater. He like blows bubbles out first. And if his bubbles touch any kind of object underwater, like his tentacles will feel it. And then he sucks the water back in. And that's how he's smelling it, if that makes any sense. So he's blowing the bubbles out, fluttering them around with his tentacles, seeing if he hits anything, and then sucks in whatever he hits and then sniffs. He can taste.
I want to meet him for Halloween next year.
If you do not go as a star-nosed mole for Halloween, I'm going to be so upset.
This is amazing.
That is amazing. Yeah, so he is really cool. So he can do great. He just looks like my nightmare.
Fair enough.
So the animal can identify individual prey in less than 2/10 of a second and determine if it is edible or not. Just like I was mentioning, he can do it in the dirt or he can do it in water. And they eat faster than any other mammal on Earth. Once they have caught their prey, they can gobble, gobble, gobble with those creepy appendages. So it's the shape.
Turn it around. I'd like to see
the nose. Oh, yeah. So I wanted to show you him.
I mean, I've seen him before, but
I'm just going to show you his nose up close.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It's horrible. And then this is his whole body. So his body is cute and fuzzy. It's just like, look at that thing sticking off the top.
He's got those mole hands, though.
That's what he said about you, man. Just careful what you're throwing around.
I know. I don't want to be described that way. No, moles' little claws are weird, too.
Yeah, because they're like kind of
claws and
meant for the digging situation.
His nails are too long.
Their nails are too long.
His snout is too octopus-like.
We're being very judgmental here today.
I am, because... like
we're
I said,
body shaming cool the moles.
I know. Scientists are obsessed with him, though, because of, I mean, he's so cool, like we were talking about. But also they think it's really looking into the world of senses and how powerful they are and
how powerful they can be.
Yeah, exactly. And how you can survive in this world with having being hypersensitive. So they're just really interested in him. But it's funny because scientists love him but are so frustrated with him because he's so hard to find because he's always burrowing underground or in a swampy marsh. And they're like, dude, we need to look at you. Where are you at?
He's like, you don't need to look at me. I'm ashamed of my face.
Lauren shamed
me. Shamed underground.
Lauren shamed me to live underground for all eternity.
Yeah. So we have one more story. That I'm very excited to hear about.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about your
one. This is just kind of a fun one.
It is.
So this is the Thanksgiving dinner that was pardoned and became a pet that's not a turkey.
Yeah. What?
Which.
Did she tell you what it is?
What?
I only knew from your description. I don't know what the animal is.
What a white trash Thanksgiving dinner.
So what is it if it's not a turkey?
It was a raccoon, and apparently it was rather common for its day.
What year was this?
1926.
Also, there's a cat hair in my face.
Sorry about it.
That's awful.
All right.
What?
Here we go.
So apparently they used to pardon a raccoon.
They didn't.
Every year.
They didn't used to. No, it was. So here's how the story goes.
Yes, okay. Please fill
please
us.
Tell me.
In late November 1926, a live
turkeys.
Animal sent by one Vinnie Joyce of Nittyuma, Mississippi, arrived at the White House to be slaughtered and served up for that year's Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, boy.
President Calvin Coolidge, however, became smitten by the beast and instead granted it a pardon. The lucky creature was no turkey, though, but a raccoon. While raccoon might seem an odd menu choice to grace the White House dinner table these days, the Washington Evening Star thought the strange part of the story was that the president didn't want to chow down on the woodland critter.
What?
Declaring raccoon meat less fatty than possum, the newspaper then invoked the culinary cliche that the ring-tailed animal tasted like, wait for it, chicken, albeit one crossed with a suckling pig.
Okay.
This is getting worse and worse.
Here's the thing. There's not too many times in my life that I'm grateful to be alive in 2018. This is one of those times. When newspapers are arguing what's more delicious, a raccoon or a possum, yeah. That's this time. That's like, I'm grateful to so be happy here in 2018.
Yeah, there's probably still people who eat raccoons.
Oh, there's 100%. There's people in my family that still eat raccoon.
Is that true?
I don't. Squirrels, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Rabbits, squirrels.
And they're resourceful. Mm-hmm.
This is also so sad because raccoons are cute. And now I want one as
a
pet.
Oh, cute. I know.
Go on.
So it wasn't total craziness because apparently Calvin Coolidge's wife was a big animal lover. And people were known to like send them pets. Like there was like a bear at one point. Yeah. Anyway, so on with the story.
Wait, hold on. Were the Coolidges... Were they the white trash presidents?
I know. Are we?
Can we celebrate them? Now?
I can't say. I don't know.
They were sent animals from all over the world.
I think they might have been the hillbilly president.
Well, Calvin Coolidge was known to be extremely tight-lipped, which I don't think fits into our narrative.
So he's a serial killer.
Yes, they weren't really keeping the animals.
All right, I'll do some research on him later.
The news was hardly surprising to the American public in 1926, however, as the president and first lady, Grace Coolidge, were known to be such lovers of animals that people sent them unsolicited pets on a regular basis. We always had more dogs than we could take care of, Coolidge wrote in his autobiography, as he reflected on his White House years. While the canines, cats, and canaries that were sent to the president may have been on the conventional side, Coolidge also received a black haired bear from Mexico, an African pygmy hippopotamus from rubber magnate Harvey Firestone, and even a pair of live lion cubs, which the fiscally conservative president gave the less than fuzzy names Tax Reduction and Budget Bureau.
Okay. Well,
all right. Well, here's
that's where you lost.
He's 100% a serial killer.
Yeah, for
because
sure.
That defies human being logic.
Also, though, someone sent him Simba and Nala.
Right? Someone, what? Yeah, and he named him Tax Evasion and Budget Crisis.
He ruined it.
Like, why? Also, so a hippo?
A pygmy hippo.
Oh, okay.
So
little
cute.
Tiny, big hippo.
Wait, so do they not get very big?
I cannot speak to that.
Oh my gosh, a tiny hippo. That'd be so great.
The raccoon was just the latest addition to a menagerie that the press called the Pennsylvania Avenue Zoo. But the Cleveland Plain Dealer reported that the masked animal proved the most obstaporosis? No, I can't
Excuse
be saying that
me?
Right. What is that word?
That is not a real word.
Mischief. Let's go mischief maker.
Yeah, mischief maker. Because of, what?
Of all the recent White House pets, it must have been a really good word in 1926.
It right.
That was the vocab word of the week. As she ripped up clothing and clawed on the upholstery, the White House staff thought the raccoon was a regular Houdini, given her abilities to wriggle free from harnesses and break out of the makeshift cages by gnawing away at the wooden bars, leading to wild chases through the president's home.
She was a bad girl.
Things began to calm down after the Coolidges built a wooden house for their new pet in the boughs of a tree on the White House's south lawn outside the window of the president's office. For Christmas, the raccoon received a special Yuletide gift, the name Rebecca, along with a collar sporting a shiny plate engraved with the words, Rebecca Raccoon of the White House.
No.
How Rebecca felt about the trendy $500 raccoon coat that the president and first lady gave to their elder son, John, that Christmas was never recorded.
Ooh.
President Coolidge quickly grew attached to this new pet. Rebecca became the president's companion, walking around the White House grounds on a leash during the day, and at night she would crawl up into her master's lap in front of the fireplace. After moving into a DuPont Circle mansion in March 1927, while the White House underwent renovation, the chief executive missed Rebecca so much that he brought her back with him in the presidential limousine to his temporary quarters. The next morning, however, the president emerged with his wrist bandage, and Rebecca was banished to the National Zoo in Rock Creek Park.
Rebecca!
The press speculated that the raccoon might have bitten the hand that fed her. But Rebecca wasn't saying anything, and Silent Cal remained true to his moniker. Less than a week later, however, newspapers reported that Rebecca was back from the zoo and again in good standing at the White House.
What?
She just, like, got grounded for
a week. Yeah, she was like, you know what? You bite me, you're going to the zoo. I'm just kidding, honey. But don't bite me.
But don't bite me.
But don't bite me anymore.
She gave the Secret Service fits by breaking out of her cage, scaling the tallest pine tree behind the summer White House, and spending hours playing keep away from the agents who tried to coax her down. By early 1928, Rebecca had a new raccoon companion, dubbed Reuben by the president. But the two got along about as well as Republicans and Democrats.
Political jokes.
Rebecca increasingly skipped out of the White House grounds to roam the capital city looking for adventure. After the periodic escapes became more of a pattern, the Coolidges finally donated her to the National Zoo. Don't expect any raccoons to follow Rebecca's lead into the White House anytime soon, however, as it is illegal to keep a raccoon as a pet in the District of Columbia.
Oh. Okay. I thought it meant everywhere, and I was like, no.
Why?
I mean, I would be super surprised.
I'd like one.
Me too.
They're tiny hands. They've got thumbs,
their
so they can do
the
stuff.
They're the cutest. I'd want them to be just like Miko from Pocahontas,
yeah,
though.
Have you seen the video of the raccoon eating popcorn?
Yes.
No.
That's a maybe. Thing. I feel like they can be so domestic.
Sitting on a couch eating popcorn.
So there is an Instagram account I follow called Pumpkin the Raccoon.
Excuse me.
Well, I will be
very
following
cute.
It.
You're going to have to do some background research, though, because they haven't posted much lately. I think she just had a bebé, so she's had other priorities.
Who? The pumpkin?
The, no,
pumpkin,
I'm sorry. The mom.
Oh, okay.
The human mom. She hasn't posted very much lately, but...
And anyway. If she just had a baby, Pumpkin might not be living with them.
No, she is.
Oh, she is?
She has posted. She has this little bathroom. She's like her main headquarters at night, and she likes to sleep in the sink, and she has this little bed that she covers herself in, so it becomes like a little shell.
Oh,
tree nook.
Oh, my gosh.
No.
You didn't.
And she lives somewhere tropical because she's always taking apart coconuts. And she's very good at it. It's very impressive.
Maybe they live in Hawaii or something?
Yeah, somewhere tropical.
Also, if we're talking about adorable animal Instagrams, you should follow Mr. Pokey, which is about a hedgehog. And he travels the world with his owner.
He's Pokey because he's a hedgehog.
Yes. And I don't know what she does for a living, but she has like taken him to Paris and I forget where else. But like he's been all over the world. Aww. And the pictures of him, he looks like he's smiling from ear to ear.
Is that
every
the one where he's like...
picture. Yeah, like he always has one of his arms up or his little legs are kicking out and he's like, go world! I don't know if hedgehogs actually smile or if that's just the go-to face.
Yeah, if it's off, if there's like a little like maggot it's offering off screen.
Right, they're holding up a bug. Yeah. But he's the cutest, Mr. Pokey.
There's also Monk and Bean and they are two black cats.
Ooh.
And one of them, they look exactly alike and I don't remember which one. I think it's Monkey. Has very long teeth and it looks like a vampire.
Oh,
they
yes.
stick out of his mouth.
Cute.
So he's constantly like
kitty.
Yeah, Monk and Bean. And Smoothie the cat is like the prettiest cat that's ever
Smoothie.
Lived.
So go follow
anyway,
all
so
those animal
what,
accounts.
What Instagram animals do you guys like? No.
Can the rest of our episodes be about animals, please?
Yes,
because this
absolutely.
Is so
actually,
much fun.
Actually, if any listeners want to send us their favorite Instagram animal handles, yes. we would appreciate that very much.
Changing the podcast to Keep It Animals.
Keep It Animals. That's all the time we have this week for Keep It Weird. Penny, I'll kill you. Thank you so much for listening to our show. And thank you to our wonderful patrons who donate to our show every month in exchange for bonus goodies.
Another
newsletter and mini-sode with Amy is coming up soon. And thank you so much, Madeline, for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And talking to us about weird stuff. It's our favorite thing to do all the time. Do you have anything you want to plug?
My dog has an Instagram.
That's perfect.
Oh, it's kind of a story to it, though. I don't do it on your outro.
Do it.
Do it on your
what's
outro?
What's the story?
We adopted a dog. Her name's Piggy. She's very adorable. She comes from a rescue organization called A Purposeful Rescue, which is really who you should be following because that's many different adorable dogs. But they are a rescue organization in Southern California who deals mainly with dogs that need a bit more medical care coming from shelters around the area.
Oh, interesting.
And so we adopted Piggy. She had some skincare issues and some other things. And they were very adamant about asking us to make a page. And we were like, no, we're not those type of people. But she already had a following from her foster sister and overnight got 700 followers.
What?
When we made the
what's
page.
Her name?
Piggy _ the manatee _ the sharp piglet.
Piggy the manatee. Oh, she's up.
Oh, she's up.
She's...
Oh! She looks like Chance from Homeward Bound, and I'm obsessed. Oh, she's beautiful.
She's very sweet. So if you're looking for another add-on, we post once in a while just to show.
Yeah, I'm following her.
The love.
Piggy has more followers than us.
I know. There's so many good animals out there in shelters that need or fosters if you have the means to do it. Seriously consider it. I've had many dogs growing up. This is my first personal own dog.
You're like a first adult dog.
First adult dog, and she's amazing, and I'm so grateful they allowed us to adopt her. So.
That's like the perfect message for our Weird Nature episode too. Yeah, like, get out there and foster or adopt pets if you can.
And it was at a purposeful rescue was where you,
which I love that too.
Yeah, this is wonderful. A nonprofit that saves dogs from the LA area shelters. Oh, there's so many cute.
That was another good thing that came out of the wildfires was how many people stepped forward to foster. I did just want to shout out to California.
I almost adopted a dog that was found in the wildfires.
I know.
But Penny said no.
Penny wouldn't allow it. Yeah. No, me and Alex literally were scouring the pages. Like, I think we should foster. We felt the need, but so many people had stepped forward. The shelters were like, we actually don't need fosters. All of our dogs found homes. It was crazy. Everyone stepped up. So that was very cool, California.
Great. Way to go, California. Also, do you want to plug Adam Ruins Everything?
Yeah, my super talented husband directs on a TV show called Adam Ruins Everything. Not every episode.
Yeah.
What?
But it's infotainment.
I love that show.
I'm very excited about tonight's episode where everybody has a lot to learn about guns. And I think there's a sleep episode he has coming up and the outdoors. I'm not sure when those are airing, but yeah, look forward to that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's Your always, you know, if you like, learning fun stuff.
Exactly.
This Adam Ruins Everything. Adam it's the funnest way to learn it.
Yeah.
Well, and I used to watch Adam Ruins Everything when it was just an online show. Like, I found it on YouTube, and I was so excited when it became real.
Did you watch the dogs episode?
Yes.
I designed that episode.
You're the coolest.
There's a little bulldog that barks at the end, and he's got a crown on.
That was all you?
I mean, like, it was, I found that crown, and
that's amazing.
Make it stick.
Yeah. You didn't know this whole. The reason I didn't tell you is because I want you to be starstruck for the whole episode.
I would have been drooling this entire time. You and your husband
wouldn't
are
have been able
my
to pay
everything.
Any attention.
That's so cool.
Make sure that you are following us on social media. Our Twitter and Facebook handle is at Keep It Weird Cast, and our Facebook page is simply Keep It Weird. Our Patreon is www.patreon.com/keepitweirdpodcast, and our Etsy page is www.etsy.com/shop/keepitweirdpodcast if you want to buy some merch. Madeline, what's our sign off this week?
Keep it weird.
I mean, it's simple.
It's classic.
It's classic. It's go for elegant.
A hike. Go for a hike. Keep it go weird. For go hike. For a hike.
Keep I it like
weird.
It.
Go for a hike. Get
That's
outside.
Yes. Perfect.
Perfect. The end.
The end. Goodbye.
EPA officials swiftly arrived on the scene wearing...
My sneeze made a fart sound and it made me laugh. I'm 5 years old.
That was pathetic.
Oh, okay, anyway.